Welcome to today's edition of the Rush Limbaugh Show podcast.
It is always an incredible honor to be with you on the EIB Network. This program built by Rush and the team and with you. And to join you on this day the Lord has made and these times in which God has decided we will live. Do you remember when President Trump was elected and all the nuclear wars began? I know this is a painful memory for some that we had in, you know, I still to this day marvel at driving through California and it looks like the Badlands of South Dakota after the nuclear bombs fell. Oh, what? No, wait, sorry. No, that was a movie. I got that messed up because the Mockingbird media types had told us that it would be nonstop nuclear war. You may remember this if you want to join us in the phones at 800-282-2882, observations on that and other things. But that was the warning. So now we're looking at the Biden administration, so-called. Joe Biden's dementia behind the militarized fence in Washington, D.C. for no reason other than theatrics. And we're seeing 160 rockets fired from Gaza into Israel. We're seeing an anti-Zionist group, if not now, says it, whoops, unintentionally tweeted support for Palestinian rioters chanting, bomb Tel Aviv. That from Legal Insurrection Jerusalem Post talking about the 160 rockets. And the entire structure of American foreign policy can be shown for the goof that it is, or has been for many years, in two examples. One of them was the incredible moment where Ronald Reagan refused to speak the words that the people at the State Department told him he was to speak. And they call that Foggy Bottom. State Department, by the way, because it's where it's located. It's by Foggy Bottom. And you could think of a lot of other reasons to call it that. We could play that game. But Reagan, of course, very famously would not give up his Mr. Gorbachev tear down this wall. And he was told countless times, it was removed countless times from his speech, Mr. President, you can't speak these words. These are provocative. You can't do that. And Reagan finally quit adding it to his speech. Okay, you win, they thought. The president stepped on stage and he put down his binder full of ideas. Sorry, it wasn't women, that was Romney later on. And then he proceeded to take out of his suit pocket the speech he was actually going to read that contained that line, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, and the wall came down. And the State Department panicked. But things changed because an American president caused them to change. Likewise, President Trump absolutely refused to adapt to the Foggy Bottom way of things. And so you saw nations like China try to figure out, how are we going to deal with this guy? I am not a tariffs person. And yet, while Trump was in office, they worked. And so desperate was the world to get back to the cozy, the pretend poker games, and that they did everything they possibly could, but wouldn't ever hack an election. I mean, we'll talk about this later in the program. Think of all the entities that have been hacked. Michael D. Brown, former Undersecretary of Homeland Security, he's a radio host too. He said this on Twitter. All these entities have been hacked, except elections. That can't happen. That's impossible. We never would think that. See, Trump, President Trump, was a guy who reminds me of me. Not me, because I'm not Trump, but sitting down at a poker game once with a bunch of Microsoft techs. All the engineers made the final table. And I understood, they already understand the odds of every hand, because we were playing Texas Hold'em. I can't play math with these guys. So I had to be unpredictable and irrational. It's the only way I could survive at the final table. President Trump was unpredictable. And so we saw dividends of this in the end, or the wrapping up of ISIS. We saw dividends of this, with the world community finally beginning to pay their fair share in these things. I continue to believe we never would have had President Trump were it not for Rush. The Maha saw in President Trump a man who would, you know, put our enemies in a state of paralysis, because the man is not predictable. Right? He's not a predictable State Department surrender drone. President Trump is not a man with whom to play poker.
I remember Bill Clinton offered Yasser Arafat virtually everything he wanted back in the mid-1990s. And Arafat ran away from that deal faster than he's probably ever run because they didn't want a deal. They wanted to continue to be able to complain and whine and moan. So the thing about it is that the inside the Beltway swamp dwellers have one way of doing things. And they've got one way of doing things for peace in the Middle East, for negotiating with communist governments and all that, and none of it. None of it really ever works. And that's just fine with Washington bureaucrats. When there is no solution, then you still have a need for bureaucrats supposedly working very hard for a solution. In many cases, the worst thing that can happen is a solution. So here you have Donald Trump. You have an outsider who doesn't know of the ways. Well, he knows of the ways of the swamp, but he doesn't subscribe to them. He doesn't believe in them. He's frustrated like any normal human being who is sufficiently informed on these matters. But what is the point here? I mean, if we're going to have Middle East peace, we've got to have Middle East peace. If it's really going to be an objective, then why don't we have it? We've been working on this for 70 years. Been going out the same way. So Trump comes in with Jared Kushner, and as Ari Fleischer just tweeted, one of the fascinating things about today's peace agreement is how the tactics of the Trump White House were the opposite of what the experts called for. For decades, the experts did the same thing over and over. Every administration tried the same thing, and it always involved, I'm adding this is not in in Ari Fleischer's tweet, always involved deference to the Palestinians. Trump said, look, these are the people holding it up. They don't want a deal, so I'm going to go around them. And he did. And in addition to that, he brought in different powers in the Middle East rather than a usual suspect. So he goes to United Arab Emirates, deal. Goes to Bahrain, deal. Lo and behold, we have two powerful Middle East regimes willing to sign a deal today, and they're going to sign it in moments at the White House, for a peace arrangement between the UAE and Bahrain and Israel. Trump and Kushner were mocked, they were laughed at all along the way, claiming they were novices and didn't know what they were doing. But as Ari Fleischer points out, they proved right. And I have to tell you, folks, when the Netanyahus, Bibi Netanyahu and his wife, when they arrived at the White House today, what an image it was. And you know what was unique about it? What was different about it? This may be the first time in 12 years that the Prime Minister of Israel was permitted to enter the White House through the front door. That's right. Bibi Netanyahu and his wife were greeted by President Trump and the First Lady Melania at the front door. It was a great photo, great photo op. Trump looking austere and presidential, Melania looking beautiful, both looking like they belonged exactly where they were. Austere is not the right word. August, they looked confident. They looked like they were exactly where they were intended to be. And Netanyahu looked like he knew that he was exactly where he was supposed to be. Well, no, during the Obama years, Netanyahu wasn't permitted to go in the front door. Just like the Dalai Lama. You remember the Dalai Lama when they left the White House? They sent him out the back door with the garbage? You remember the photo? I do. We probably have the photo somewhere in our archives. It was the same way with Netanyahu. Remember the first time Netanyahu was in the White House during the Obama administration? Obama was rude to the guy. And it gave rise to many people. Well, this guy's got a problem with Israel. Meaning Obama. And Netanyahu was brought in the back door, and he was taken to some room in the West Wing. And Obama said, "You sit here. You sit here. I'm going to have dinner with my family, and I'll be back. And you better think about what we're doing here, or what you want, because I'll be back." I mean, the implication: you're not good enough for me to have dinner with. So you sit here with your group, and you do whatever you do, and I will be back. And we better have something to talk about when I get back. I mean, the animus that the Obama administration had for Netanyahu, it was impossible to miss.
There it is, that what we see today. We see now every reversal of this in the Middle East, of that progress. And I admit that I was looking at Jared Kushner saying, you're the guy who's going to go cut this deal. He did. They did. Because they did it the way the State Department would never do it. They cut the party out who didn't want the deal. Who wants the agitation? Who wants to be able to use these people as these pawns? They cut them out. And that's the part that John Kerry and the ketchup heir he is, or the ketchup king, married for ketchup money, dude, was out saying during the Trump administration. He was out saying, just stay put. We're going to put Iran back in charge of things. It's almost like that should be, it is illegal. No, only for Republicans. Great news and a funny bit of skullduggery out of California. When we come back, it's Todd Herman in on the EIB Network this week. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network, and it is so important for us to find the moments of I don't know that it's great news as much as it is verification that America is still here. I'm of the belief right now that we're in a situation where we're not a United States, and that may even at this point sound almost obvious. I began to say that years ago, and people would say, that is so irresponsible. And I began to say, you know what, when I'm seeing citizens attacked on the streets by terror groups, that means to me that we're in a state of cold civil war. And people, that's wildly irresponsible. And then we watched, of course, this summer that unless you're, was it Thomas Friedman at the New York Times who was unaware that cities were burned? We watched all that. So it's really important, I think, to look at our country and find the instances to know that the American spirit is there. It's not dead, even in a state like California. Have you ever had a loved one, say, suffering from, an addiction or a mental health crisis that's sort of long form, and you know they're in there? You know your loved one's in there. And you see glimpses of the person you know they can be if they're unhampered by the chemicals or they're unhampered by the mental illness or just sometimes the stress, right? You yourself can find yourself doing things. And me, I'm a great example of this, doing things I'd not do were it not for stress. So in the stress our country's in, Gavin Newsom is facing a recall in California. The American spirit still exists to such a degree that this, perfectly chiseled, crafted, almost humanly photoshopped Gavin Newsom with no discernible ability to lead other than he is a good-looking man. So good-looking. What other qualities does he have? Well, he's good-looking. Anything else? Well, he's willing to use taxpayer money to fight off this recall. This is the way this is written, and the way it just rolls off the tongue just shows you how bizarre things have got. I read this in Legal Insurrection, Leslie Eastman. California Governor Gavin Newsom, who faces a recall election soon, plans to use a budgetary, quote, surplus to send billions of dollars back to taxpayers and undocumented residents. Listen to this line. If approved, the state would, quote, give $600 checks to workers who earn up to $75,000 annually with $500 bonuses for tax filers. So people who pay taxes get some back. And with dependents and undocumented families. If you want more of something, subsidize it. They want more illegal immigrant families in California. And this is, that's obviously atrocious and strikes me as paying people to commit crimes. We should look into that. We should look into whether hiring people to commit crimes, is that illegal? If I were to say, go to someone and say, I'm not breaking into that bank. You think I'm crazy? I need you to do it. You would get more punishment for insurance fraud if you decided you wanted to arrange to have your car stolen and you got caught getting your car stolen than he would get without this recall. If you're in California, one of Rush's listeners in California, you have an opportunity to not just recall Gavin Newsom, but to show the rest of people trapped in these separate countries, these communist countries within our borders, that the American spirit lives. Your vote to recall Newsom could be a sea change for this country. I beg you to be involved in that. Now, I just have to marvel how it has to just dig at Gavin Newsom's ego to know that Rush Limbaugh was so spot on about Newsom's actual popularity, or really lack thereof.
How in the hell can the governor be popular out there? But this governor, Gavin Newsom, runs around like he's a king, like nobody opposes him, like everybody's. And there's plenty to be dissatisfied with out there. The tax base, people are fleeing. Well, it turns out the guy is underwater. California voters appear to have turned against Governor Newsom. This is a guy openly advocating illegal aliens disobeying ICE, for example. He's one of these governors that actually advises them in advance how to avoid ICE raids. He's very proud, said, we're not going to obey federal law. Screw your federal law. We're going to set up our own. We have to obey yours. Which, you know, that's Lincoln-era stuff. And everybody just assumes that everybody in California supports this guy. Well, it turns out, no. Most recent Public Policy Institute of California. Public policy. They started in North Carolina. It branched out now. And he's underwater. 44% disapprove, 43% approve. It's basically a wash, but he's not got massive. And this is one of these myths that the drive-by media loves to try to create, that all liberal governors, all Democrat governors are universally loved. They're overwhelmingly popular. But this guy's not. This guy's a smarmy individual anyway. He mocks Trump all the time. And Trump turns fire back on the guy, calls him a do-nothing governor. There's not a single Republican in the country that would respond to these clowns the way Trump does.
There isn't, and there needs to be. There's starting to be some people who will do that on the Republican side. Can I just present just this thing I've been working on? It's, if you've ever read these old sales books, there's something called the Columbo Close. This is when you're walking out of the room because you didn't close the deal. You say, hey, by the way, what's the real reason you didn't buy? Ask a question like that. I'm working on these for town halls. So one of the questions in a California-type town hall, if you got to ask a question, would be, yeah, are there other classes of crimes that we're going to pay people to commit? Because we're paying people to commit immigration fraud. Are we going to pay people to commit bank fraud? Because why are we picking crimes that we underwrite with taxpayer money? Another question. At what percentage white are you irrevocably racist? I got my DNA testing back. I'm 49% white. Am I 49% racist, or can I get like a DNA modification and then I'm not racist? Is that how we undo the whiteness? It's questions like this that put people like that in complete, you know, just frozen eye mode. You're asking me to use logic and math, and I was told there'd be no math in life. We come back. Tim Tebow versus Colin Kaepernick, but in another way. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. So it's back. They can't stop talking about Colin Kaepernick. Tim Tebow got a second NFL tryout, and people, of course, went I love this word so much. I love saying apoplectic. I don't know if I say it correctly. Apoplectic? They went nuts. I have confirmation from the broadcast engineer, Mike Mamone, that I've said apoplectic the right way. They just went nuts that Tebow got this chance. Tim Tebow's probably not going to be an NFL quarterback. Colin Kaepernick's probably no longer going to be an NFL quarterback. Neither of them achieved the greatness they would have wanted in the sport. One of them is not bitter about that. One of them is of good cheer. And both of them, you know, have lovely white parents and grew up in a position perhaps of at least comfort to privilege economically, if we're to speak in the nomenclature of the left. I would have said this thing to Kaepernick: you're not speaking. Taking a knee is not speech. I can put on you whatever I want to put on you. It turned out I was right. You don't like America. You didn't vote. Maybe you do now. You're not a person who's deeply educated about these things. By choice, I think. And when you wear socks that say all cops are pigs, well, then that's also speech. But taking a knee is not speech. It's a demonstration. Tim Tebow took a knee. But for other reasons. I mean, think of this. You got two guys who wanted to be NFL greats. Two guys who, they didn't quite make it to that level. Sure. One got closer to greatness on the field. And one of those guys took a knee in prayer and the media hated him for it. And the other guy wore those all cops are pig socks. He took a knee during the national anthem and the media loved him for it. Rush compares Tim Tebow and Colin Kaepernick the way only the Maha could.
In the sports drive-bys, they won't let go of this Colin Kaepernick thing. They just won't let it go. The NFL has not hired Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick walked out in the San Francisco 49ers. He had a contract. He walked out on it. He didn't want to play with them anymore. Becomes a free agent. He has no offers. The sports drive-bys are outraged. They think he's being blackballed because of his politics. He may be. And if he is, the people blackballing him have every right to do so. What do you think the First Amendment's free speech clause grants you? The right to say what you want? Politically, you're right, it does. Now, First Amendment says that government cannot stop you from saying what you want. It doesn't say the San Francisco 49ers can't. If you work someplace, your First Amendment rights do fall under the policies of your owner or of your boss or of your workplace. This is not a fine point, but the larger point is this. The media is trying to portray Kaepernick as a hero for courageously and with great guts criticizing his own country and criticizing the bias and the prejudice and the murderous police. It takes guts and courage. Now, there's every entitlement. Kaepernick, anybody else, has every right to say what they want to say about that. But two things are incumbent here. No one has the right to be heard. And this I find, when I say this to people who think they understand the First Amendment, that shocks them because they've never thought of it that way. Yeah, you can say what you want, but nobody has to listen to you. The second thing is, you have the right to say what you want. You have the right to believe what you want, but you do not have the right to not suffer any consequences from it. So if you are going to make a case as a player in the NFL that your country is rotten, that your country misteach people of color, you're going to say what Kaepernick said, then you've got to be willing to accept the consequences of what you said. How many people do you think believe that Kaepernick should be applauded for courage and not have to suffer consequences for what he said? How does that work? Everybody, you know, there's a price. There are consequences. There's going to be a reaction. Not everybody's going to agree with everything that anybody else says. Kaepernick is not a victim, but they're trying to portray him as a victim. He went out and he said courageous things. He had the courage to criticize his own country. And for that, he should be made a hero. That's not how it works. You don't get to go out and say provocative things and then be immune from criticism or consequences. Everybody is. And so that factors into what you're going to do. If you're going to go out and you're going to say things that are going to make it harder for the people who might hire you to do business, it makes perfect sense they wouldn't hire you. Now you add to that that these people may believe you're not any good anymore. But if Kaepernick isn't being hired because of what he said, that's perfectly normal. Anybody who's been in the free speech business understands this the first time they ever say something controversial. Why do you think most people shut up? Why do you think most people don't want to go there? They don't want the reaction. They don't want the controversy. They don't want the criticism. So they don't say anything. They whimper around. They may react when somebody else does, but most people will stand or sit mute. Those who, and the reason is because they see what happens. Now, some of the responses, some of the circumstances, not fair, admittedly, but in a free and open society with the First Amendment guaranteeing political speech, there are consequences and there are ramifications. And the point is, the First Amendment does not grant anybody immunity from the consequences of what they say or from the reactions from people to what they say. And Kaepernick is being held up as somebody who should be immune. He should not be held accountable for what he said because we happen to agree with what he said, the media says. That's not how it works. If you're a football coach and you believe your team needs discipline and focus, if they're to have a chance, the last thing you want is a circus for whatever reason. Talk to Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow, the exact opposite of Kaepernick, loves America, is a born-again proselytizing Christian. Why do you think he's not in the league? A lot of people think because there's anti-Christian bias, Mr. Limbaugh. There may be. But there are also people that don't want to deal with the circus. And if they don't, that's a consequence. You know, it may seem unfair because you make value judgments on what someone says. Like, you may value what Tebow is and what he says, and you might not think so much of Kaepernick and what he says or does. But in both instances, there are consequences for behavior and for reactions. And if, you know, if you want to be on radio or TV, that's what Kaepernick, I think what he ought to do, Kaepernick ought to get a show on YouTube and then go to town. We can say anything he wants. Google would celebrate it. Google owns YouTube. But Jim Brown said it. Jim Brown said, Jim, you make up your mind what you want to do. You want to play football? You want to be an activist? It's that simple.
Yep, there's cost to speech, but it doesn't always need to be high economically. Do you remember when Rush described his discovery of Pure Talk? It's a cell phone service company that provides unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data every month for just $30. And if you go over on your data, they won't charge you. There's likely a lot of money to save. Rush spells it all out.
Hey, folks, you know, you can spend all kinds of time deliberating what kind of cell phone you want to own, what kind of cell phone you want to use, but you might spend 10% of that time deciding on your cell phone carrier, if that much. Now, maybe you spend more than 10%, but really, there are options out there you may not know about. Cell phone service has become expensive. You know, I remember back in the days of flip phones.
This is before 2007, before the iPhone was invented. The theory was that your service was going to be given to you as long as you paid for the phone. That's the way the experts thought the trend line was, that service is going to be pretty much free, but you got to pay for the phone. Now that's turned upside down. Now the phone costs a pretty penny, as does service. Cell phone service has become expensive. The big brand name carriers charge a lot because, well, they can. So there's another company out there that we want to suggest you look into called Pure Talk, because their focus is on providing you the best cell phone coverage and service for about half the price of the big brand names in cellular service. Pure Talk gives you excellent coverage. It uses the same cell towers as one of the biggest brands. You get unlimited talk, unlimited text, 6 gigs of data for about $30 a month. It's on the same tower that you're probably using now, same towers. And if you go over on your data usage, Pure Talk is not going to charge you for it. Switch to Pure Talk. Keep your phone number just as it is. Pure Talk will help you make that an easy switch. From your cell phone, just dial #250 and then say Pure Talk. #250 and say Pure Talk, and you'll save 50% off your first month. That is #250 and say Pure Talk. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from Pure Talk. Something to look into.
It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. There is happenings in Hollywood that are also very good news for us. It is. And we had a drive-by caller, Bernie from Syracuse, say that we are not the United States of America, but the untied states of America. I think that's a really good way to say what has been done to, because it didn't happen. None of it's organic. It's all purposeful. The country's being divided by people who hate us. And they are obsessed with our destruction. And we can pretend otherwise, and that's a fun game, but it's not going to get us anywhere. The good news out of Hollywood is this, that the Golden Globes are canceled 2022 because Hollywood cannot be diverse enough to satisfy their masters. And their masters, they're themselves, their masters, their money, their ideological nonsense, the choosing to be hypnotized by, we must be completely diverse by not believing in men and women. That'll make you diverse. We must be completely diverse by calling out for responsibility only for speech we disagree with. So the reason it's good news is when they start to see their work canceled, when they can no longer have their self-congratulatory award shows, they may get fully rewoke, as into reality. Right? I mean, how many times did Rush discuss with us what the NFL and Hollywood are doing to themselves by chasing wokeism? If only they had some, you know, enduring principles by which to live.
Anybody watch the college football championship game last night? Donald Trump walks on the field at the 40-yard line for the national championship game, national anthem, singing along, heart covered by his right hand. And in that, I mean, the place erupted in cheers. Now, the drive-by media is saying that there were some boos. I haven't talked to anybody who heard any boos. Now, there had to be some, of course. I mean, the place was filled and the law of averages is such. But the cheers and the support for Trump was overwhelming. And, you know, ESPN's televising the thing, it had to just destroy them to see Trump show up and then to have this kind of reception and this kind of support that he got, and for showing up in the national anthem and standing and putting his hand over his heart and singing along with it. And then you find out after the game last night that the college football ratings were through the roof. Meanwhile, ratings for the NFL wild card weekend were down double digit percentage-wise all four games, Saturday and Sunday. And Trump, in a little bit of a microcosm last night, the college football championship, illustrated exactly why. In addition to the college football ratings being way up, where there are no kneelers, where there is no disrespect for the American flag or the country, the NFL playoff game's double-digit ratings decrease and the Golden Globes ratings were down from 2017. They fell to a six-year low. Now, what do these two things have in common? The National Football League plummeting ratings throughout the season and the Golden Globes show ratings down a six-year low. What is the thread that runs through both of these? Yeah, the protest thing, but what's behind the protest thing? Liberalism is what the thread is. Liberalism is running through this. The left, the forgotten people in flyover country, do not want to see all of these wealthy millionaires lecturing them on how horrible they are and how horrible the country is. It doesn't compute. Your average ordinary American watching Hollywood celebrities with their vast displays of wealth and power, you know, just entertain us and go home. Don't preach to us. What gives you the right to preach to us? Now, they can try it. They can do it, but it isn't working. And the more they preach in actual movies and in their award shows, you see what is happening. And what is being demonstrated here is that people are demonstrating, proving slowly they can live without Hollywood award shows. And more people apparently can live without the National Football League. Now, what if that establishes as a habit? What if this establishes as a new normal for people to begin tuning out these two entities that have become major institutions, dominant institutions in America? And this, I don't think, is a one-year one-off. It's not something peculiar to 2017. This, I think, is a major trend. Look, if this were happening in your business, if you were losing audience like this, if you were losing customers like this, you would be deathly concerned. You'd be panicking. You'd be working on ways to reverse it. These people aren't. They are doubling down. Every time the American people show their displeasure by walking away from these events and not watching them, these people, rather than try to, and this is typical of the liberals, by the way.
And now, their Ego Fest is canceled for the year. When we come back, I'm going to tell you about something you will hear tomorrow on EIB and only on EIB. And I just promise you, it's not something you want to miss. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. I wish you guys could know and get to know Team EIB. There's such talent and humor and intelligence on the other side of the microphone, as they would say, or as I just said. One such person is going to join us tomorrow. Bo Snerdly, whose actual name is James Golden, is the host of a forthcoming podcast, Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the golden EIB microphone. He's going to join us just after noon Eastern time tomorrow. Talk about the stories to be shared in this new podcast series. The first episode's available on Wednesday. It's sponsored by Tunnel to Towers Foundation and MyPillow. And I would just tell you this. I am certain that all the folks who had the privilege of working with Rush all these years have amazing stories to tell. I know that James Dash Bo is a great storyteller. And you're going to hear things. I'm going to hear things I never thought I'd get to know about the Maha. So you'll hear this in a very personal way. I really encourage you to mark your calendars for tomorrow to hear James Dash Bo Snerdly. And I'll see if we can. I have a question of mine. I don't know that I'll answer it. But I do have a question in mind for James to begin that. We'll get back with more about the Skrulls. Todd Herman, your guide host on the EIB Network this week. It is always, it's an honor. And how else can I explain this to you? I've only used the word surreal in relation to this and a really tragic event in my family. To be with you and to be your guide host this week, it's that. Phone number is 800-282-2882. On this day, the Lord has made, in these times in which we have, God's decided we're going to live during these times, we have this responsibility to get ourselves comfortable being uncomfortable. Because we're going to have to be uncomfortable should we want to win our country back. Or, you know, have an opportunity to have it actually be united again. To not fall in all the way over into communism, we need to get comfortable being uncomfortable. With this nonsense racism, critical race theory, which is in fact racism, being taught in the schools, I know it's very scary for most people to speak out because it's not a thing that most people do. It's uncommon for most people to do it. It's impolite. Just one suggestion, ask them to live by their rules. At school board meetings, ask them. Or in a parent-teacher conference, if you're with a white teacher and you're in a parent-teacher conference, say, so when are you... when are you resigning so a person of color can have your job? They're not going to have an answer for that. Or if they're teaching the perverse and pornographic sex ed labeled comprehensive sex education, underwritten, by the way, by Planned Parenthood, I wonder why, ask them questions from the curriculum. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. School board meetings. Say, so do you have these sort of devices in next to your bed at home? What? How many? Oh, we were teaching my kids. I thought it was fair game to ask you if you do this. Make them live by the rules they're creating for the rest of us, because right now these things are beautiful theories to them, but it's ethereal. Confront them with what it would be like to actually live this way. Randy Weingarten, the president of the American Federation of Teachers and a member of the AFL-CIO, was on Fox News with Martha McCallum on Monday, and she discussed kids returning to schools, as Rush would have said, and the ongoing debate over critical race theory. Or say it another way, Randy Weingarten wants the teachers to stay home unless they're teaching kids to be racist. McCollum's question, do you believe that 1619 is a factual program?
So, Martha, I believe that I'm a history teacher and I'm a social studies teacher, and I believe we should teach history. And from everything I can see and understand from the data I see, 1619 was the year that the first slave boat came from Africa to the United States. So that's a point in history that I think we should be teaching.
But that's very simplistic, take on it. I mean, the 1619 Project teaches that that's the true beginning and the founding of our nation, not 1776, and that the reason for the revolution and the colonization was because colonists wanted to preserve slavery, that the country was founded on the basis of wanting to preserve slavery, but that is not factual. That is not true. In fact, scholars in this area say there's no evidence that colonists were motivated by that in coming to the United States. So it would be wrong as a historian to want to teach them something that is not true, because that's the basis that sets up all these other tenets that lead to teaching kids that we live in a systemically racist country.
And what are the questions to ask these teachers who are being forced, or some of them just decide, well, it's easier just to go along and get along, to teach kids to be racist? Here's a quick question. Are we going to pretend that Native Americans didn't take slaves? Because, you know what, amongst many things, they were super skilled warriors and believed that when you conquered a people, you could own slaves. Are we not allowed to discuss that? Or that black people took black people as slaves and that slavery still exists in the country? We need to get comfortable being uncomfortable asking questions like that. You know, Rush sliced straight to the center of the rot in American education, from the simple things like the actual name of the 4th of July to the more important like American exceptionalism. And kids and young adults are increasingly taught everything but the truth.
We have repeatedly said, ladies and gentlemen, that these protests and riots are being led by college-aged kids who literally know nothing about American history. They have not been taught the truth. This is key to understand. They have not been taught the truth of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, the founding, and then made up their minds that they think these guys are reprobates and creeps. And they've not been taught the truth. They have been propagandized and indoctrinated from the get-go. They have been filled with hatred. Pure and simple. But they think that they've been taught the truth, finally, that 200 years, 240 years of education in this country was the lie, and that the period of time they've been in school was the truth. But the fact of the matter is, and it is very important, they haven't been taught the truth. They've not made up their minds independently of anything. They have been propagandized, and they have been indoctrinated. They've been taught to hate America. And it has to be pushed back against. It can't be tolerated. To push back against it is said to be divisive. What are we supposed to do? In the name of tolerance, just sit here and accept the lies that these kids have been taught? Accept the lies as a sign of tolerance or fairness or what have you? How is it divisive to stand up for the truth? So Trump stands up for the truth, stands up for the truth of the country, the greatness of the country, and he's divisive? Trump's not tearing down statues. Trump is not defacing relics. Trump is not trying to damage or erase our history. He's trying to restore it and maintain it. That's divisive? How in the world does Black Lives Matter escape the characterization of divisive? How do any of these left-wing protest groups escape that they are the ones who are divisive? It's obvious. Some of our schools and universities have become some of the most anti-American places on earth. Indoctrination centers for anti-American propaganda. Campus Reform, great website. They went out, they spoke with young American students ahead of the 4th of July to see what they knew about the holiday. And even though most of the students at Campus Reform interviewed said that America was a racist country, most of them couldn't answer even the simplest questions about Independence Day. They didn't have any idea. 4th of July, have no idea what it was. College people, college-educated people. Students were asked, for example, what the holiday commemorates. They were asked which year the country declared independence. They were asked which nation the United States declared independence from, and which was fought for American independence. What war? Many could not answer any of these questions. Some answered that America gained its independence in the 20th century. Others said the corresponding war was the Civil War. World War I, World War II. They had no concept. How do you get into college and not know it? Because the SATs have been corrupted. Because the entrance exams have been corrupted to coordinate with what people have been taught in high school. It's a concerted effort. You know the name Howard Zinn. Howard Zinn is the author of the textbook used all across America. The guy's a Marxist. He hates America. He always has. How it become a number one textbook, I'll never know. Well, the answer is obvious. The leftists are everywhere. Our education system is lost. We have totally, totally lost it. And during this two generations of loss, we've had American parents striving, sacrificing to come up with $40,000, $50,000, $30,000 a year to send their kids off to be propagandized. And they've done it with pride. They've done it with great pride that they've been able to get their kids into these colleges. We are looking, folks, at a massive failure of the American education system. Or you could look at it the other way, a triumph. These people are showing what's possible. When you get hold of the education, imagine if genuine American-loving patriots had been in charge of the education system for the last 50 years. It wouldn't have been necessary to even elect Trump. That's not a put-down. Just telling you, Trump would not have been unique. Make America Great Again would not have been necessary. People would have believed that that was the objective every day, and they would have believed that we've met the objective. And now we've got teachers. I read teachers in Northern Virginia, i.e. Washington suburbs, are demanding hazard pay for the coming school year. Teachers who have been doing nothing since March want hazard pay. They want special pay. People stocking shelves in grocery stores and trucking and delivering supplies all over the country, they haven't made such demands. Teachers, hazard pay? Because what? The virus? Where's your commitment, teachers? You people have been, and look, I know there's exceptions, don't miss it, but how many times have you heard a caller to this program, a teacher, a conservative at either a high school or a college, and they whisper it? And they tell us they're using a fake name because they don't want to be identified. There's always a renegade conservative professor somewhere at some university, some college, some high school. We hear from them. Wish I had a dollar for every time I have addressed the issue of our declining education. As I say, there's two ways to look at this. You could look at it as the abject failure of the education system, or you could look at how they've triumphed. They have demonstrated what you can do if you control the education system.
And they've opened for Republicans, if they'll take it, the biggest arguments ever for vouchers for public, non-public schools, for private schools. You can productize freedom and free kids from indoctrination, GOP. You got the guts? It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Man, I cannot believe that the truth fell off, well, actually fell onto the pages of the New York Times. They're actually calling out the lie of outdoor transmission of the COVID in a really clever way. We got to get to this today because it just it refocuses the mind on the walking, talking scam that is Dr. Tony Fauci. Got to get to that. Let's talk to, though, Rush's listeners. David in Bernard, Minnesota, you are on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. David, glad you called. Welcome.
Thanks. I want to see if I can condense what 100 million plus Americans are feeling right now, and that is paralyzed. We've read history books. We understand that if you go back 2,000 years and coming forward, never in recorded history has once tyrants or tyranny has usurped a population and taken control, has it been defeated by a peaceful protest or a vote. And so knowing that, having that knowledge, we see an administration that has control of our military, a corrupt DOJ, corrupt FBI, corrupted courts, corrupt media, and now it's creeping into our police departments too. And we feel like there is nowhere left to turn, nothing else we can do. And that's that people mistake it for a malaise or an apathy. And it's not the case. People feel that they're up against insurmountable odds, and there's just nowhere left to turn, and that causes people to just be paralyzed and stuck in place.
So their plan is working, and that is to put people in the emotional state of paralysis. And so you have taken the first step towards fighting this in a peaceful way, which is you recognize that they have put a lot of people in that state. Understanding that you've been put into an emotional state is the first step to exiting that emotional state. So, for instance, they have us in this position to scare this paralysis. If we say, you know what, I am going to choose to recognize something. Bravery is not the absence of fear. Bravery is acting despite the fear. I choose to be brave. I take that step. I choose to understand. They would like to normalize what is basically an oligarchy of Zuckerberg and Biden's dementia and whoever's actually running the White House. They'd like to normalize that. The biggest thing we can do is to never allow the normalization to speak phrases like, and it's not out of disrespect. I promise it's not. I'm not trying to pretend that dementia is funny. It's not. There's a reason I refer to Joe Biden's dementia, and I constantly say behind a militarized fence there for theater only. That sort of mocking at this stuff is what we do. We mock it in that way, and it can never fully take hold. Where it takes hold is where it's normalized or that sense of desperation comes. The other factor in this, and I mean it, peel the stinking woke masks off your beaks. I'm not kidding you. That is the illogic here. With the New York Times admits there's not a recorded case in the history of this virus of a transmission outside, and people are still wearing these and walking around them. Take them off. Do not do that. This is submission. Don't do that. And then with these questions of these local politicians, make them live by the rules. It will wake them. The only chance to get these people to wake from these rules. Look, I'm not going to abuse Rush's show by giving the details of some of this pornographic sex ed. I just tell you that you would need to look up the sex acts they're teaching your kids. If you heard the words for them, you wouldn't know what they were. One of the tamest I can say is blood play. Ask these teachers in parent meetings. Hey, yeah, do you and your husband or you and your partner, do you guys do sexual blood play at home? How is that? Is that good? You have to. We have to make them understand. These are your rules, guys. This is the system you're setting up. And if we get ahead of them in absurdity and we start demanding face-to-face to white teachers, you need to resign, you are not BIPOC, you need to resign. And if someone says to you during a meeting, well, what do you say? You have privilege. Nope, I'm not. I just switched sexes. Right in front of you. Click. I just switched sexes. Now I'm a woman. Now you can't say that to me. And it's not to mock people. It's not to mock the people who are victimized into believing these things. It's to wake these people from the dream by forcing them to live in the nightmare. That's the step. Force them to wake from the dream by forcing them to live in the nightmare. And that is to force them to live by the rules they're creating for everyone else. Wendy in Chico, California. You're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. Welcome, Wendy. Glad to have you.
Thank you, Todd. And I appreciate EIB and all of the hosts that have filled in for Rush, keeping Rush close to us. And we all, I think the Rush family, radio family, really do appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm in Chico, and actually a little bit south of Chico in a very rural area. And what I've noticed is that, you know, I've noticed this for a long time because I've lived here for a long time with a short excursion to Texas for about 18 months. And then we just moved back. My husband is a doctor, and we have access to a lot of people, a lot of patients, a lot of opinions. And this is an extremely conservative area. I was telling this call screener that our neighbor flew his flag at half staff when Rush died. And, I mean, that's the kind of area this is. I have another neighbor who still has her Trump banner up in her yard.
Yeah.
It's an interesting dynamic being in California and yet being in a very conservative area. Now, when I was in Texas, I had to keep telling people that I was meeting, don't worry, I'm a conservative. I will not come in California, you're Texas.
Yes, people do that in Idaho as well.
Kind of you go around, you know, yeah, explaining, I am okay, you know.
Can I make a suggestion?
Very relieved.
We're with the same dynamic in Idaho, because I constantly say to people, I grew up around here. In other words, I'm part of the club, right? So let me just beg you to do something, please. There's a lot of conservatives in Chico, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Can you just please get, and I'm not kidding, an RV or a bus or something that you guys can all get in and start going outside of Chico and doing what the left does? And start, I'm not kidding. Go. No, listen, they
stop
do this. No. Oh, please don't do that. No. We don't do that. We don't take away other people's rights to travel just so that we can force them to hear us screaming. No, I'm asking you to go sneak into city council meetings in Sacramento and county council meetings and to go in and disrupt by asking these questions, such as go in and all of you in line. All of you have the following questions. Yeah, since I can smell barbecue through masks, how's it protecting anybody from a virus? I can see the barbecue smoke, but I can't see the virus. How's this protecting anybody? Next step up. Yes, I was reading some of the curriculum you're teaching in the public schools here. This is related to group sex. Yes, you, the leader of the school board. Have you had group sex? Because it's a question I'm asking you because you're teaching our kids. Or next person up. Yes, I demand right now the resignation of every single white person on this board who believes in this enough to step down so that a black person or a person of color, to use your language, will take the place. You start doing these things, you'll make them wake from this ethereal dream of their manufacturing equality or equity that can't be done by humans. Only God Almighty can provide that. You'll wake them from the dream by understanding the nightmare. The leftism will come for you. It will come from your job. One day you can't be woke enough. I hope, and let me know if you do that. I want to see the parade of conservatives into those areas. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's 800-282-2882, but you probably know that by heart. You know, it's amazing how many people joined Rush just in the last year. Last time I was privileged to host, be the guide host of the program, we had like three callers who joined Rush in the last year of the program. So it continues to grow. That is reason, by the way, to have access to Rush 24/7. Because as you introduce people to conservatism, actual conservatism, you introduce them to Rush, you have decades, three decades of Rush's wisdom and humor and parodies at Rush 24/7. Get it at rushlimbaugh.com. In every possible capacity, we need to out-absurd the absurdities of what the left is doing to people. The left is really good at theater, and often conservatives aren't, because we tend to want to be free to have actual governance, and we tend to be busy living life. But when this would seem parody in a sane nation, but we're not right now all sane, particularly states like California. This is from Reason.com. In the name of equity, California will discourage students who are gifted at math. New framework keeps everyone learning at the same level as long as possible. Literally trying to hold back the minds of children. Literally attempting to prevent growth. Literally stealing them from them their potential. And it won't work. You can't, well, short of pharmaceutical intervention, you can't crush intelligence. Raw bandwidth will overcome a lot. A lot of disadvantages raw intellectual bandwidth will overcome. Like, raw physical talents can be a basis for great success when added to hard work. But in the case of these mathematicians, they want to steal from them the hard work. So our absurdities need to be more absurd than them. And I'm not trying to create a situation where teachers are constantly getting uncomfortable questions. That's not my goal. My goal is within the schools to, as I've been saying, make them live in the world they're putting our kids in, such as at a school board meeting. Yes, I just noticed that Member Schultz is a lot better at speaking than Member Smith. So, Member Schultz, would you please put some pebbles in your mouth when you're talking so that you stutter? Because otherwise, there's no equity here. And while we're on the topic, Member Johnson, you're awfully good looking, and I just noticed over here this gentleman is not as good looking. So, Member Johnson, could you come in here next time with bedhead? And I know it seems absurd, and it could seem funny, and it should seem funny, and it should seem absurd, and we have to do it. We have to demand that they start living this way now. Another one. Yes, I stand before the school board to say we have no business in a building of mortar construction. This was stolen from the Aztec people. This design was stolen. These arches are Roman. We can't have Roman arches. They were the first of the white conquerors. I say tear the buildings down. And there will be people going, you're mad. No, you're not. You're saying they're your rules, so live in them. And sometimes that absurdity can wake people because they're being abused by this wokeheartist Ed. The Maha found the prototypical victim of wokeheartist Ed, a so-called journalist, who's abused of the notion that the technology we developed in space flights has been useless to society.
The lack of education extends to way too many places. This journalist, his name is Matthew Iglesias, and I don't know where he writes. It's Vox or one of these millennial places, Slate, I'm not sure which. But here's the tweet. It's weird to me how often JFK's let's put a man on the moon idea is cited as a success story. It cost tons of money, was driven by Cold War hysteria, and turned out to be useless to the point that it's been decades now since anyone has bothered to go. Do you realize how ignorant that is? From beginning to end, and I'm being charitable calling it ignorant. Let's put in a man on the moon, cited as a success story. It cost tons of money, driven by Cold War hysteria. He's referring to the fact that the Russians, the Soviets, put a satellite up there called Sputnik, and that made us all paranoid. We were afraid that we were going to be annihilated by a nuclear bomb launched from space. So we had to get up to speed in the space game to keep up with the dastardly Soviets, who people like Mr. Iglesias thought were harmless, and turned out to be useless to the point that it's been decades now since anyone's bothered to go. Now, he can only think this if he has had absolutely no proper education about that era. I remember when I was a teenager, a man named Shorty Powers of NASA came to Cape Girardeau. They were in the process of selling everybody on the space program. NASA was doing nationwide PR. Somebody in our little town had enough pull to get somebody from NASA to come in and do a speech, a presentation. And my father was fascinated with space. He was a pilot, so he took me to this thing. And one of the aspects of Mr. Powers' presentation was all of the technology that was created out of necessity for the space program to put a man on the moon, to keep human beings alive in little bitty capsules in outer space. The things that were necessary to invent to make that possible, had ramifications throughout everyday American society that led to the enhancement of our quality of life, that led to the opportunity for prosperity, because it didn't just stick in the space program. The things that were necessary to be invented to keep human beings alive in a vacuum and to be able to launch them into space and fly them at speeds of 25,000 miles an hour, the things learned, the things developed and invented to be able to do that, ended up having everyday application in America to the point that the list is so long you can't mention them all. Now, yeah, they would have probably happened immediately, but to say that the space program was a waste of money because it was simply a Cold War paranoia is ridiculous. How about the invention of the CAT scanner, computer microchips, cordless tools, freeze-dried food, including Tang, insulation, memory foam, satellite broadcasting, interstellar communications, scratch-resistant glass and lenses, smoke detectors, water filtration. The list is endless. Things that the space program had to invent to sustain life that found their way into everyday life in America and eventually found their way into everyday life as cheap as needed for as many people to be able to access them. The idea that the moon program and the space program has been a total waste of money and a bust could only be stated by somebody who's not been taught the true meaning and the true value of such pioneering experimentation. Somebody who's been taught what a waste of money it was to oppose communism. That's the root of this. We had no business opposing the Soviets. We had no, the communists weren't a threat. That's what today's liberals think, and that's what yesterday's thought.
Tang! Putin have had Tang! This is, like, Iglesias, as Rush spoke about, was a victim of early wokeism, undeveloped wokeism. There are kids in mixed-race families, I've talked to them, whose parents, just one stands out, the father was a cop. He's black, his wife was white. Father is a Marine and now a cop, and his mixed-race kids are coming home saying, so which one should we be? Should we be the oppressor, the white part of us, or should we be the oppressed, the black part of us? And mom said, hey, how about if we just be us and make the schools answer questions like that? Honestly, making them uncomfortable by us getting used to being uncomfortable, that's one of the first steps to taking our country back, I promise. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It doesn't take a radio show in order to clown people for change. And like you, I'm a lifetime student of the always continuing education of the Limbaugh Institute. And these last few segments are examples of why the Institute for Advanced Conservative Studies is so important. Rush often took calls from students, both young and old, and I want to revisit a call from a reformed liberal who finally saw the light.
This is Sarah in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I'm glad you called. Thank you so much for waiting. Hello.
I'm very terrified of public speaking, but somehow you inspired me to call in.
Well, thank you very much.
I wanted to actually just share a success story that you helped bring about. Last October, I was pretty much liberal to the point where I didn't understand what I was doing. I had just recently graduated from college about a year or two ago. I didn't know much. I'm ashamed that I didn't educate myself very much in this. And I was really taken by some of the pretty speeches that Obama had given. And I guess I really wanted to put a message out there for anybody else who, they have the right mind, but they're on the wrong team. So I wanted to thank a couple people, specifically you, because without you, I wouldn't have anyone to turn to for common sense news, which is what really got me. I really cherish listening to you. I listen to you when I exercise every day. It's the only time I really get news. So I only listen to yours and then maybe Fox later. For the young people like myself who are around college or just outside of college, I want to give them an encouraging message. I was liberal or close to it. I wanted to do the right thing to change things for the better. And at the time, Obama's speeches sounded very humanitarian. I do not think about that anymore. I know that liberalism is not really about helping people or causes. It's more about making everyone equal in mediocrity or dissatisfaction. So I don't want any of the younger adults out there to let guilt drive them to make wrong choices. And so I thank you specifically for starting me off on this journey. I also want to thank Sarah Palin, who I got to meet at a book signing last fall. She's a great person. She's also another person with common sense that I can easily follow. And then, ironically, I have to thank the frauds at the Global Warming Institute, because without them, they would not have catalyzed my reaction to pretty much fear and hate liberalism. I was a supporter of global warming for a while, and I didn't know as much about it, but I did put my faith into scientists and their research.
Sarah, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed talking to you and hearing you share with us your revelations. And I know it had this had to be a slap upside the head. I hope you're okay now. You have to understand, that's the kind of thing you live for. Here is a young college student who just didn't even know why she was liberal, but she had every misconception about it, that it was compassionate, that it was humanitarian, that Obama was indeed something special,
She believed in global warming, and what, in less than a year? It's all blown up. And she wanted to call here and talk about it, and she did. I mean, here it is, folks. This is liberalism on display. Unfettered, unchecked, unstopped in Louisiana. Well, prior to Bobby Jindal, in Detroit, in California. I mean, wherever you look, that there's huge trouble. You're going to find liberals and unions that have been in charge and in power. And now you've got Obama and the Democrat Party now no longer even asking George Lakoff rhymes with to help them disguise what they're doing. They're just open about it. And people see it. This is why I say, from now on, no Democrat or liberal ought to ever be given power again. But they do package what they do well. They do mask themselves well when they start getting into gear, but talking about how compassionate they are and how fair they are and how mean the Republicans are.
And they're telling people with mixed race kids, their kids should hate themselves because part of their selves are white. It's an absurdity we need to point out. Ryan in Green Bay, Wisconsin, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. We've got about a minute and a half together. Ryan, glad you called. Welcome.
All right. Thanks, sir. I appreciate you, Todd. Two parts. Yes. I'm a mixed father. I'm a stepfather. And my daughter is being chastised. She is indoctrinated. She's called the peach. And I'm also being chastised for being a conservative white man who I apologize, but I'm conservative, I'm white, and I'm raising a mixed kid.
When you say mixed kid, what does peach mean? I don't know that slur.
Okay, her little friends call white girls peach, and call nothing that's white brown. So if you're brown, you're brown. If you're white, you're peach. And she comes home every day and cries.
Yeah,
because she's peach.
Yeah. And what I want to just.
And to me, it hurts because I'm a conservative and our people are good and they accept everybody. But because I'm conservative, somehow I'm a racist. But for 3 years, I took on the role of stepdad to a African-American child who's also blended with Caucasian. Her father is not good, but I love her. I always will. She's not my blood, but I will always love her.
Ryan, so the clock is our enemy here. It's not that I'm not interested in what you're saying. I'm, in fact, deeply hurt by hearing this. I want to leave you with a thought. God Almighty made you and your daughter, and he really likes the color you are. In fact, when he made human beings, he said, it is good. It is good, brother. I'm sorry that you're hurting, and sorry for your daughter being pushed through this. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. So next hour, we're going to be talking about something that greatly concerned Rush, the ever-growing welfare state. She discusses here. I think. We'll get to that later. Coming up next hour, we will talk about the ever-growing welfare state. And on the topic of our last caller, whose little girl is being called a peach, and my daughter was called a cracker. So apparently the slurs are different in the Pacific Northwest than they are in the South. Either get your kids the heck out of the government schools. I mean, I know. Plus, trust me, I beg you, I fully understand the sacrifice that represents for people. And if you cannot, prepare them from day one to know that there are people who speak lies and that they're going to speak a lie about skin color and that it will never be the truth, right? That skin color cannot determine who we are. And yes, it is to that point where we need to arm our little ones to expect this, but also to have the tools to know internally who they are and what they represent and their principles and their status as creations of God Almighty. That's one way to fight back against this. One more hour, Rush's take on the big welfare state that continues to grow. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Yeah, it's been just an honor to be with you and chat with you today on the EIB Network. Thank you to everybody that you never get to hear behind the scenes who makes this, well, their job's the hardest by far. It's 800-282-2882. If you'd like to chat on this day, the day the Lord has made as a gift for us, an opportunity to improve. New York Times could use some improvement. Let me give you the battle of two headlines here. This is in regards to the pipeline being shut down, the hack of this. This is the New York Times. Colonial Pipeline, a vital U.S. artery that was shut down by a cyber attack, said it hoped to restore most operations by the end of the week. Since the shutdown, there have been no long lines for gas and such. Then you can go to the Twitter and find video of people stuck in long lines for gas and showing gas stations saying, we're out of gas. Then you can go to the Daily Caller on Twitter, who has informed us that the governor of North Carolina, Roy Cooper, has signed an executive order declaring a state of emergency in North Carolina Monday. Why? Because of a gas shortage. I think Monday was yesterday, as I recall. If there's an emergency for gas, this would mean, of course, that it is absolutely time to get... You have the woke mask? Do you have them nearby? I mean, wouldn't it be the case now that you should put those over your gas tank and the opening therein so that you don't put gas in there? Or maybe don't do this, because someone will do it. Put it on the exhaust pipes. There has to be some emergency order thing. Or maybe the car stays home. I guess that's factual. But something to reflect upon here. The hack is a high-tech endeavor, clearly, to hack the system. That should give us enormous pause that so many things have been hacked. Adobe, eBay, Equifax, LinkedIn, the Office of Personnel Management at the White House, as Michael D. Brown's former Undersecretary of Homeland Security points out. But U.S. elections? No way. No way. That could never happen. What? Here's another thing to think about. Is there value in the old ways? Legitimately, if you've... New York during a electrical outage is a different thing than Idaho during an electrical outage. Clearly, you guys, not many people in downtown Manhattan are going to have firewood. And if you do, you've no place to burn it that's safe. Those events in other parts of the country have different outcomes. It's inconvenient for us, and we can go out and put wood on the fire. It's inconvenient for us, and there are such things as natural gas generators, for even things like AC, if you need that. It's inconvenient for us, and there's food sources in our gardens. There's food sources in the woods and in the lakes. Now, I get it. Not everybody can live that way. Is there value in the old ways? You know, I had a friend of mine who was an auto mechanic and owned a series of automotive garages or automotive facilities. And he used to give away these bumper strips after people got their cars worked on. He had a roadside service. So if your car broke down on the side of the road and he came and fixed it, you'd get this funny bumper strip that said, everybody hates a redneck till their car breaks down. Well, there's value in the old ways and knowing how to do these things. We have I read years ago, and I'm sure they've corrected this now, that it occurred to naval commanders that a good portion of the people in the world's best Navy, the United States Navy, couldn't steer the ships accurately without GPS. And so they undertook to teach the young naval officers how to use a compass and paper and the stars and the old ways that were made for us as guides for us. So while the hacking of this thing is high tech, and look, I'm just as well as anybody can marvel at high tech, just as I used to work in it. Low tech has value. It really does. I got so frustrated with sometimes in Seattle, we'd be out to fancy dinners and conversations would turn to, I sure wish we could get rid of the fishing
boats and processing facilities in Northern Ballard. Those could be beautiful parks and riding trails. And then the waiter would come along with their Pacific salmon. Sir, your Pacific salmon. Oh, thanks very much. This looks great. Thank you. And I'd say, where'd that come from? Well, the restaurant. No. No, it came from the jobs you just mentally stole. These fishing jobs and people who risked their life to bring you that fish. That's where that came from.
Well, I didn't mean to take them out of work.
No, you did. Because that's what you were saying. I feel like the left hates jobs like that. Or they want to convince people who have careers like that that they're not good careers. They're great careers. I have a cousin who's a fisherman and now owns several boats himself. They're great careers. See, when you listen to Rush, did you ever get the feeling ever that he'd lost touch with Missouri? With the people who fed the folks in Missouri? Who clothed them? Did you ever get the feeling that he lost touch with them? Neither did I. Rush admired honest work in all its forms.
Last night was the annual dinner for the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation, the annual fundraising dinner. MCLEF is 23 years old. I was there in the home of one of the founders as the whole idea was being put together in 1993. It was a home in Rockville Center in New York, and it was a number of great ex-Marines, some now in law enforcement, some were in finance, and they wanted to put together a foundation which would provide college scholarships for the children of Marines killed in action. They later added law enforcement to it, and many of them worked in the FBI. Many of them worked in law enforcement, police departments elsewhere. And so what was originally a charity to provide college scholarships for the children of Marines killed in action was expanded to include children of people in law enforcement. And on extreme emergencies, 9/11, MCLEF expanded to all federal agencies where heads of families died and their children needed college scholarships. I became an early donor. I've never been an active, practical participant in the actual structure of the charity. But Catherine and I have been active donors and active fundraisers. And last night was the annual fundraiser. It was a beautiful setting. It was jam-packed. It's a black tie event and formal military attire. And it is a night totally devoted to celebrating the Marine Corps, celebrating the United States military, celebrating the values and the traditions of the military, which I think form the bedrock of the values and traditions of our society at large. So it's Catherine and me and our six guests, well, three guests and their wives at one table. We pulled in right as the reception and cocktail period was ending at 7 and everybody was being seated. And it was one inspirational speaker after another. There was a woman who lost her husband in combat. The foundation had provided scholarships for her two kids. She gave a stem winder of a speech about what it all meant, about what it meant being married to somebody who the families know what's going to happen, what can happen in combat. Without the people that were in that room, the country wouldn't be what it is. As the closing speaker said, and he was responding to some of the comments I made, because I talked about this divide in the country, and I told him I'm worried. I told him that we've got a serious challenge. We've got a great nation at risk in a dangerous world. And I talked about this divide, and I talked about, you've heard me say, the theory that I don't think we have anything that binds us together anymore like we had in World War II. This guy stood up after I'd finished. There were some other comments, and he referenced it not by me and by name, but he said, look, let me just tell you something. We wearing a uniform here in this room tonight. Don't worry. We got it. We got it. But it was the people in the room last night, the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation, not just the uniformed Marines, but the people that were there as donors and who show up every year. It was a microcosm of what I believe is people who make the country work, make the country run. They had the time of their lives. One of these guys wants to go play golf. These people remember everything I've said from the time they have been listening, and they're throwing it at me at dinner. I'm just stunned and blown away. They remember more than I do, and I have one of the best memories in the world. And they remember more than I do about certain things I've said and when and how. So it was an invigorating evening, and it was very uplifting. And I wish everybody could participate in events like this for that very reason.
And clearly people, law enforcement and the military, they're the people who make the country work, along with people who work on these pipelines. All this focus, and rightly so, on this major hack of a backbone portion of our energy system. And I would just ask this question of, what if there were no truckers? What if there were no pipeline employees? And what if the pipeline employees and the truckers got so upset that they're being forced to pay for college for people who snuck into the country illegally? Or they're looking at the numbers, people getting paid $40,000, $45,000 to not work post-COVID flu, post-Great Reset, which began, in my judgment, in March of last year, that they said, hey, not anymore. And maybe one of the side effects of all this is that we might get to return to respect for people who can do things with their hands that most of us just have to watch DIY TV to even pretend we could do. I think that would actually serve us well. Rush was very spot on everything, but particularly about a truism about, if you want to have any influence in the world, Rush offered a truism that people need to put into their hearts, because I've told you, we need to make ourselves comfortable being uncomfortable as we force people on the left to play by their rules. We'll talk about that as we continue. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. This is from WLOX. That was pretty professional radio right there.
Should I talk now?
The WLOX, millennials diagnosed with anxiety more than any other generation, according to recent data. There's a lot of ways to look at this. One of them is millennials are weak, and there are some weak millennials. Some of them are very strong. There's also this. They have been brought up in a culture where everything they say is rated, where they're a swipe right, swipe left. They know this. A misdeed is stored on social media. You can actually watch brutal things said about you, lies, multiply and grow. Very few human beings can deal with that. Very few. And I have been the target of lies in the media. Well, for instance, there's one right now that the left is busily using what's called search engine optimization to bring back to the top. It's this lie that I made a joke about people of Hispanic descent, and what I was actually joking about was people who make such jokes. And everybody knows that. And that's making it back up into the top because the left knows that I've been privileged to host this program. So they'll bring that back up, so I'm embarrassed. But I'm not embarrassed because they know what I said. Anybody who wants to have influence has to be okay understanding that influence means that people are going to respond sometimes angrily or poorly to you, or viciously, or call you names. Part of the theme of the show today has been what I suggest to save our country is to ask uncomfortable questions in uncomfortable settings. People, you know, in a dinner party saying, I do think there's something to this idea of whiteness. Oh, you know, while we're talking about that, I was talking about blackness too. Can we talk about blackness? You want to see a room shut down? Well, certainly if there's whiteness, there's blackness. You'll see a room shut down. You'll make people plenty uncomfortable. And you might just stop someone in a pattern. They're in a pattern of just accepting the pablum thrown to them by the mockingbirds. You must just stop them in that pattern. They may not say it then, but the next time they hear whiteness and not blackness or Asianness, or it might just stop them enough that they don't go full commie. But to do that, you have to not care what people think. I would have loved to have watched the eyes of an NPR reporter grow like to basketball size when Rush employed one of his many valuable life lessons in answering her question of him. And here's Rush describing that and more.
If I could wave a magic wand and change people, it would be, don't worry about what people think of you, particularly people that don't know you. People that don't know you, it doesn't matter what they think. You and what you think of yourself is what matters. And if somebody thinks things about you that aren't true, forget it. Nothing you can do about it. And it's a total waste of time to try to change that.
I've occasionally get emails from people, Rush, don't you care what they're saying about you on X? Why, it's outrageous what they're saying about you. And, yeah, I mean, sometimes I do, but most time I don't. Happens too much to get worried about it and to be affected by it. I did an NPR interview. One of the questions that the reporter for NPR asked me was, you use terms like feminazi, you throw these things around, don't you worry about it bothering people? And this is the answer that I gave. The fewest number of words you can use to convey a point, the more power the point has. Now, I understand people are going to be offended, but I've had a policy all my life not to worry about offending people because it's going to happen. It's a daily part of life. I think way too many people are way too sensitive, walking around just waiting to be offended. And I think a bunch of people claiming they're offended is really an attack on free speech. It's the root cause of political correctness, which is nothing more than silencing things you don't want to hear when uttered by others. So that offends me. I will not sit here and put up. I don't grant people that much power to offend me. The things said about me or the things I like, I'm not going to waste time being offended by it. Life's too short. And it's just words. Plus, my life is fulfilling. I'm not wallowing in misery, thinking everybody else thinks I'm a dork, because I know I'm a dork, which is the attitude so many people have. They're just miserable, and so they just come along, and they get offended, and they run around saying they're offended, and they try to shut people up because they're offending them, and it's just because they've got nothing else to fulfill their lives. You know, they're basically empty and meaningless. If you have a fulfilling life and you're occupied and doing what you like, these things are minor. Especially when you know that it comes with the territory.
So as we enter into this experiment together of asking these absurd questions, making these absurd points in school board meetings, in zoning meetings, at dinner with friends, understand it's a natural dynamic in the world that, look, there's a bunch of people you probably don't like. I try not to hate anybody. I really do. I try really hard to not do that. There's people I don't like as much as others. There's people I don't like. Natural human equation. What's not natural is the multiplication of the numbers of dislikes on social media, etc. We need to be okay being uncomfortable because we had better start making leftists uncomfortable by asking them questions, forcing them to live in the world that they're creating for us. Adam in West Virginia. Adam, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. Got about a minute and a half together. Welcome, Adam.
Hey, Todd. Thanks a lot. And thanks for all you bring to the table with the guide host. Hey, listen, one of the points you made earlier about in the last hour was about the education system here. And just basically dumbing down all our kids. I had a daughter that was in Shanghai, China, doing a teaching gig over there for about 6 years. And, of course, and this is true in, I think, all the Asian countries, the emphasis on education is just something I don't think our kids could withstand for 10 minutes. But one of the things that I thought was fascinating and really just a little – is just odd because we don't do it here, is the emphasis that they would put on tutoring something that their kids were already excelling at. If you had a kid who was excelling in mathematics, you got a tutor. Science, you got a tutor. Now, they tutored everything else as well, but, you know, their focus was like, hey, we got a kid here that is really good at this. Let's make them the best. And over here, yeah, it's like, well, we got a really, you know, we got a kid over here that's not, you know, that's excelling above the other. We need to bring him down so nobody else feels bad. You know, we have to come to the conclusion that everybody's not going to be good at everything, and everybody's not going to be bad at everything either.
Right. And Adam, what you just said, there are people who, even in an audience like this that is steeped in current events, there are people who are now learning for real. That there are cities that have dropped advanced classes because they're racist. Well, they're not, but because the result they can say is racism. That they have dropped their – we were just talking. What you heard us talk about earlier was out of California where they are disappearing or not letting kids advance in math. They're artificially holding people back, and this is proof – that equity in the modern sense of leftism and wokeism, equity means you must not live to your potential.
If you don't live to your potential, you can't be a neighbor who drives another to theirs. Show me your friends. I'll show you your future.
Right?
That's a truism, and it holds true to this day. It's a great phone call. Thanks for reminding us of those differences. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. One of the ways that the big government has been allowed to metastasize is, of course, by hiding itself. It's a weird thing, but, I mean, it's hiding right in the open. The job reports that's come out that everybody who has one finger touching reality knew would be the case when, under cover of the COVID, they started handing out money and bonuses that equal more than people were earning when they're working. It is literally the most common of common sense. It is literally the easiest form of human psychology that exists. I can employ effort and get less, or I can employ no effort and get more. I think people should work. And I also understand that I could see someone saying, why? Government hides itself in a lot of ways. One of them is, you want to see the United States flip in a positive way? Stop hiding the withholding tax. All these governors, there's a good bunch of them. Kristi Noem, Greg Abbott, Ron DeSantis is doing great work. Guys, governors, want an idea? Paycheck Transparency Act in your state works like this. You will say to employers in their state that they will, in fact, show people what they're paying in income tax by giving them a check for the full amount that's not cashable. It's just, here's what you would have earned if it weren't taken by the government. But if you did that, the red states would become redder, and maybe people would move there. Actual conservatives would move there. You know, as we all remember, in terms of the government handouts and the safety net becoming a high-end hammock, as we all remember, Rush warned us about this all the way back in 2008.
Now, let's take a hypothetical situation. Let's take a single mother of two living in Pennsylvania who goes out and, because some community organizer has lobbied Congress to make home mortgages available to people that can't afford them, our fictional character in Pennsylvania, mother of two, single mother of two, goes out and gets a house that she really can't afford. But because it's the American dream and the members of Congress has mandated that this happened, the woman is secured for a loan, and all of a sudden the rate goes up, and it's a problem because she can't pay for it. She can't afford the monthly without maybe doing without food or driving less. And maybe she's got to pay for daycare because she has to go to work. If she's got daycare, she's got a job. So she looks to the government, because the government roped her into buying a house, told her it was cool and hunky-dory, she thinks. But the rest of us were not involved in her decision. And this, to me, is the key. I don't know this woman in Pennsylvania, and I don't know what she did. And I don't know the circumstances. And yet, the woman, and this is going to sound harsh, but we're going to have to get a handle on this. It's all around us what this is leading to. The credit crunch, the mortgage crunch. Entities that supposedly have assets backing their worth that don't have those assets. You got Chuck Hugh Schumer out there starting runs on banks. Stock markets, you know, going up and down, the gasoline price, the oil price. A lot of people are very much on the edge here. And many of them are just, you know, they're like what the rest of us are. They're just prisoners to these cycles. But if, in the case of our fictional character in Pennsylvania, I had nothing to do, nor did you, with the decisions that she made. And unless you and I are involved in the decisions that everybody else makes, which is not possible, then we can't know whether the decisions they've made are wise or unwise. Now multiply that by millions of families. In this country, we spend $3.1 trillion a year. This is not a safety net. This is a hammock. $3.1 trillion. Most of us cannot put our arms around that. Most of us have no concept of how much that is. But it's enough that we're not talking about government creating a safety net. We're talking about a massive government that is involved in all things and wants to be involved in even more. $3.1 trillion is not chump change. It has become a hammock. The consequence is regulations and taxes are, in fact, harming more and more families, making them poorer, and making it more difficult for them to succeed. This much we know for sure. This is what happens when government gets in your way. The list of examples is endless. From the family that goes out and buys a plot of ground and finds out later on that there's some sacred grouse on it, and they can't do anything with it. Who says? The government. Some regulation. With a kangaroo rat in Bakersfield, California. Farmer had to get rid of his farm. Wetlands. This is the whole assault on private property rights is just one example.
If to Rush's point about all of these examples and my point about the big government effective at hiding right in the open, if the governors of these states wanted to start this paycheck transparency program, every employer in the state has to tell people what their gross pay would have been minus government. And you could push that into other states or privatize that and let people see what has been taken, because most people never know. That's how I saved my first serious money. I just signed up for a silly 401k and just took the advice of my financially smart friends and just forgot it existed. Here's another thing we could do as a family. Seriously, start this today. Start tracking how much money your immediate family pays in federal income tax. Start tracking it. I mean, it's not the same as the family Bible, but it is a legacy of how much you've already spent on government. So that as the nation, as this insatiable thirst for our life's energy, which is that's what our savings represent. It's the result of our life's energy. Money for which we work is different than money that we're given. Money for which we work is a literal exchange, your life energy for that resource. If you started to track, here's how much money our family spent on the federal government and hand that down to your kids, it'd be harder for leftists to come and say, I want more. Because you could say, no, part of our legacy is our family has already spent $1 billion in government. I mean, just speaking of like that sort of legacy, that sort of family legacy, so many of us have cherished family possessions, a keepsake item like an item of jewelry or picture of those previous generations. You keep them in special places in your home. Just by mention of it likely makes you remember where those are. We also tend to keep those older family videos and film, but there are many great memories on those, and you'd never throw those away. So how do you access those
memories? You know, for families big on taking pictures, making family movies when everybody gets together, the boxes of old pictures and videotapes, they become valuable because nobody's seen them in a long time. But they recorded important events at important times in a family's history. And you keep them, right? You've got boxes or collections of old Super 8 or VHS, Betamax tapes, Super 8 film, maybe even some slides. You don't watch them anymore because nobody's got VHS or Betamax VCRs. Nobody's got Super 8 film projectors. But you've got this stuff. You keep it because you know what's on it is important. And you tell yourself at some point we'll get around to making it worthwhile. Well, that time is now. How do you bring those old things back to life? It's very simple. You rely on an outfit by the name of Legacy Box, the company that has brought back all of these old invisible memories.
For more than 1 million families.
Legacy Box digitally transfers pictures, family videos, on any format that you have. Legacy Box makes all this possible. You start by ordering one of their specially made boxes for delivery. It's shielded so that gamma rays, X-rays, ultraviolet rays, whatever, don't get in there and destroy what's on the tape or the film. You load that up, you send it back using overnight delivery. Everything's trackable. And they keep you updated every step of the way with text messages and emails. And then they safely return all of it. They high-speed dub this stuff. And that's the best way to maintain quality when you're dubbing, reproducing things. If you want it as a computer file, they'll do that too. However you want it, they'll deliver it.
Legacybox.com/rush.
That's the website. Use my name there and get 40% off their package prices. Is any number of different packages based on how much stuff that you have. And if you use my name when you sign up, 40% off. Legacybox.com/rush.
It's been an honor to be with you, and it will be for the rest of the week. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. The EIB high note today is about the power of true love. And true love is patient and kind, and it is, it's never angry. And I mean, it's hard not to be angry sometimes. But this is a story of a devoted 79-year-old husband who went to a beauty school in Canada recently to get lessons on hair and makeup. 79 years old. Why? He wanted to help his wife of 50 years who was struggling to get ready each day, a routine in which she takes great pride. Carrie Hanna is the director of the College of Hair and Aesthetics in Calgary, and she said it was a first in her 31 years in the industry, but one of her best days as an instructor.
He knows his wife always cared about her appearance, and he wanted to help her. He wanted to make her life better. He started to explain that his wife was struggling with her vision right now and was struggling to curl her own hair, and she was burning herself, and he really wanted to help her. He just genuinely warmed everyone's heart, and it was just a really feel good. We really all need some cheering up, and he sure did it. Relationship goals, like, he set the bar pretty high.
It's really high bar to go learn to do hair. So, of course, that's a great, great story of love. And we thought we would just pair this high note with a montage of Rush talking about his great love, Catherine.
The lovely Catherine, the greatest, best wife ever.
My lovely wife, Catherine.
Catherine. My lovely and beautiful wife, Catherine. Catherine looked radiant. Just beautiful.
Just got another message from Catherine, which says, "Ha, babe," because she heard me talking about the note from the watch. So now I'm going to reply to it. Very cool, isn't it, sweetie? She has led a fascinating life. She's grown up all over the world. Her parents, her mother was a State Department diplomat, and her father was a Naval Academy grad. She speaks a number of languages and has been a number of places and is a fascinating person. Catherine said, "Why don't you do a book for kids telling the truth about American history?"
The only place I really want to be during all of this, aside from at the side of my lovely wife, Catherine, is in the radio studio.
The beautiful and gorgeous and just wonderful Catherine. Catherine, the beautiful, incomparable Catherine. Catherine, the lovely and gracious, the most beautiful.
She's just been a gigantic pillar of strength by virtue of her countenance and her being. Optimistic, happy, bouncy. I've been defended. I've been made to look better than I am. My lovely wife, Catherine, has done so much in that regard. I could not be doing this without Catherine. I have never experienced anybody so selfless. I marvel at her selflessness. I don't know how she does it.
Catherine and I, well, I know it's true for her, too. I've never been happier.
From the love of another to the love of our country, Doddridge in Wilmington, New York. You're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Glad you've joined us. We've got a short time, so have at it, Doddridge. Welcome.
First of all, blessings to all of you out there from Wilmington, New York. Look, we are forgetting something that Rush taught us off the bat, keeping it real. All the problems we have had, it's now because of the placating of people. They want something, and we gave it to them and never thought of the ramifications. Now we are suffering those ramifications. We need to teach these children coming now respect. If you don't respect yourself, you cannot in life respect anyone else. So we got to get back to Reelsville. All who feel they are this and feel they are that because you feel you are what you think you are, you does not make you. Sorry, I have gay children, and my son even believes he is a female. It does not make him a female. For the rest of his life, he'll be my son who thinks he's a female. Get back to real life, okay? Realville is what Rush called it. This is coming from a U.S. Army 22-year veteran. And I have not retired, and I will not. I will stand defending this country for the rest of my life. Blessings to all of you out there. Blessings to Catherine, the EIBT, and you, Todd. Thank you for doing a wonderful job carrying on the torch.
Man, Doddridge. Wow. You know what? That's a one-minute monologue. Can we just all for a second? Reflect on the beauty of the way Doddridge, our friend, said that. Man, that is powerful. Doddridge, God bless you. Thank you for serving this country, not just in the armed forces, but with attitudes like that. Prayers for your son. Your son. Prayers for your son, Doddridge. Thank you for joining us. A very important programming note when we continue. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Hey, just a huge, very important note that tomorrow, Bo Snerdly, whose real name is James Golden, is going to join us to talk about his new podcast series, Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the golden EIB microphone that's sponsored by Tunnel to Towers Foundation and MyPillow. And James is here at the beginning of tomorrow's program. I'll just tell you, you won't want to miss James talking about Rush and how things came together in the control room and the call screening process and much you'll hear for the very first time. You'll only hear that here. And just in regard to so many of the calls today related to the heart of family and the heart of truth and the speaking of truth. In times of universal deceit, speaking the truth is a revolutionary act. And that's the times in which we live, is a time of universal deceit. For me, of course, you know, I often tell you that my truth is structured around my faith in Christ and that's how I structure my life. You may structure it that way, and you may not. But I hope that you will structure it in a way where there are true, undeniable truths that can't change. Because the left is busily scrambling the minds of our kids. And really what they're doing is trying to make truth whatever they say it is. Now, who would want that power? To be able to say, truth is what we tell you and shut up otherwise. Those are not people with good intent in mind. Seems like just the father of all lies. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network.